Mackerel Podcast number 362 for July 3rd, 2013. Welcome to another Mackerel Podcast. I'm Chris Breen. We often hear about young developers, boys and girls age 6 who've created the latest mobile sensation. But in the clamor for youthful innovation, we sometimes forget about those who've been in the business for the long haul. Seasoned professionals who've seen the software landscape change over decades. I'm pleased to welcome just such a professional to this episode of the podcast. Peter Tamte, who's seen Apple software development from the beleaguered days to the triumph of iOS. Let's talk to him now. My guest today is Peter Tamte, a name familiar to a lot of us in the Mac press. In his distinguished career, Peter founded MacSoft in the 90s, and it was the popular Mac-oriented game software company. He was the senior director of consumer marketing at Apple, the executive vice president for Bungie, and is currently the president of not one, not two, but three companies, Destineer, Atomic Games, and Theory.io. Welcome, Peter.
Oh, thanks. Good to be with you, Chris.
So as president of Theory.io, you've just released a new iPad product called Note Suite, which is a notes and more app that's been 2 years in the making. And I just looked at the App Store, and it seems that you're number 9 in the paid apps section. So good on you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're thrilled with the way people are receiving the work that we've done with Note Suite. Absolutely thrilled.
So, and also I see that you're in the new and noteworthy section. Is that just something that Apple, you know, they review the software and go, wow, this is cool, we're going to promote this?
That's exactly right. Yeah, no, we don't even know ahead of time. They just, it just goes up, and we find out that that turns out that the people on the review team at Apple, the editorial review team, are interested in it as well, which is great. We're thrilled by that, obviously. And on the Mac side, they actually gave us an Editor's Choice Award.
Ah, excellent. Okay, so I want to get into the specifics of Note Suite a little bit later. But because you have been in the business so long, and I'm not calling you old, but... But you've been around, you know, so you know how this business works. So I want to talk a little bit about how things have changed over the course of time. So you started in the early 90s with MacSoft, and that was focused on gaming and on the Mac. And now you've turned a lot to the iPad. So what's that say about the state of each platform?
Well, you know, I think times are changing, certainly, and that some of the most exciting things for those of us who like to build products are happening on mobile devices. That's certainly a big part of it. And the other piece that's really a big difference, of course, is the way people buy the software. You know, when we built MacSoft, one of our strengths was our ability to get products into the retail distribution around the world. And now there's just a limited number of digitally downloaded stores that we need. It's a different sort of experience to work with getting a product out through an app store than it is through a retail store.
So do you miss having to set up a retail outlet at all, or is the Mac App Store and the App Store just a wonderful thing for you?
Oh, you know, there's great things and there's challenging things with the way it is right now. The great thing, of course, is that you can reach so many more customers through selling the product online. There's just no question about that. You know, now if somebody's interested in getting a Mac app, or they're curious what's out, whether it's an iPad app, iPhone app, Mac app, they just push a button on their device and they can see what's out.
Right.
It can't make it easier than that, right? The challenging part of it, of course, is that there's no barriers to entry. So when you're dealing with brick and mortar retail, you know, you really had to jump through a lot of hoops before you could get that product on the shelf, and that meant that that the products that actually made it to the shelf had to have a much bigger investment behind them. So in many cases, that they could be a higher quality, and there are certainly far fewer products, like probably 98% fewer products that made it to the shelves. So now, while a lot of us look at the enormous amount of choice that we now have on the app stores, there's a downside to that as a consumer. And it's that it's harder to find the ones that are really interesting, because there's a lot of just Me Too and poorly executed apps out there. So that, and on the publishing side, it means that it becomes very difficult to sustain a presence in front of your customers when you are competing against 900,000 other products for attention.
Right. And what about the reviews process? Is this, is that a reliable measure for people looking for software, or do you think that it's sort of like Amazon reviews where, yes, there's some reliable ones and others are kind of gamed?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question that there's gaming going on in the App Store customer review section. I mean, we've been frustrated with that, where we know for sure that competitors of ours are going in there and posting really negative comments about a product, some of which comments are in most cases, they're not true. In other cases, they might be true. But I mean, an example that happened just to us today is that we got a customer to put a 1-star review on our product because it won't work with a beta preview version of iOS 7 that came out 3 days ago. Well, nobody's supposed to actually be running beta versions of preview versions of their software. And you certainly shouldn't go on the store and post a 1-star review if it doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, the whole reason Apple gives us the beta preview is to go make our stuff work with their iOS 7.
So does Apple get this at all? I mean, are they trying to do anything about reviews as far as you know? Or do they say, well, we require people to buy the software and then they can review it?
I haven't had the chance to have this conversation with the Apple folks yet, but I definitely want to. And there are two things that Apple could do right now that would really make a big difference, I think. Number one is giving the app developers the opportunity to respond to reviews mm-hmm. that are posted in the store. And the second thing would be some combination. I would suggest actually requiring people to use real names would be great. Mm-hmm. And then the ability to click on that person's name to see everything else that they've reviewed.
Right.
If you could do those two things, I think that it would really go a long ways to legitimizing the information that customers are getting in the App Store reviews.
Yeah. Okay, well, as somebody who's been in this business for a long time and as a business person, is there money to be made developing Mac software, or is the smart play going for iOS?
There's definitely money to be made on Mac as well right now, absolutely. And I think that's coming from a couple of perspectives. Number one is that there, unlike the iOS store where you just have just ridiculous quantities of product that's going in there, on the Mac store there still is a wide variety of content, but it's still possible to get attention, I think. The second thing, of course, is you get that benefit, but at the same time, you also get that enormous reach and accessibility mm-hmm. Now of people being able to push a button on their computer and seeing what's new on the Mac. So we have been very pleasantly surprised when we look at the sales ratios between the iPad and the Mac right now. We're feeling very, very good that this market of selling through the App Store is a really positive thing right now. And then the other thing with that, too, is I've talked with a lot of other publishers that have made that conversion over to the App Store. And by and large, they are seeing the same thing.
Okay. Now, what about Android? Is it worth your while, or generally the while of others, to develop their products for both platforms?
Yeah, so there's a number of problems with selling on Android right now. The first one is that you've got four or five different Android platforms that OSs that you've got to support, and then you've got to support that across 30 different devices. So it's a real mix of that's a quality assurance absolute nightmare mm-hmm. to be able to do that. That's the first problem. The second problem is that the environment for selling the products is not as reliable as Apple has set up within the app stores. And then the third problem we got is that, quite frankly, Google has trained their customers that everything is free.
Right.
And so while you're seeing great unit volume of sales on the Android stores right now, you're seeing very much, much smaller dollar volume sales on the Android stores right now. So the economic proposition to the developer right now is basically that you have a much higher QA and development budget. You have stores that are more difficult to sell through. And then number three is the customer doesn't want to pay for it.
Sounds like a real picnic.
Yeah, it is. Right. It is. So, I mean, there's reasons why so many developers are still really orienting themselves towards iOS. Now, that being said, you have the inevitability of the pervasiveness of Android that is going to change those economics over time. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think that one of the things that Apple would be smart about is to recognize that it has this enormous advantage right now and with developers, but that cannot last, and that there's going to be a challenge that's going to be ahead of them to keep those developers on the Apple platforms as Android economics gradually get better and better.
Right. So how does Apple respond to that?
I haven't had that conversation with them yet. But I would be shocked if they haven't seen it. I mean, you've got, I work with a lot of the people once upon a time, long time ago, I worked with a lot of the people who are running the show. And these are all people who, besides being, really smart, absolutely love the Mac, love the Apple platforms. They have history.
Yeah.
They saw Apple. What happened to Apple when it had these enormous advantages with the Apple II and then the Mac, and how these things went away. And I think that they're pretty aware of the causes of that and have some ideas, I'm sure, of ways that they can prevent the similar sort of declines that I think some of the more mainstream press is accusing Apple of not understanding.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, you've been intimately involved in gaming, yet your recent iOS efforts up to this point have been about productivity. So is iOS gaming not a good play for you at this point?
Correct. So there's a particular kind of game that seems to, and I shouldn't say one type. There's four or five particular types of games that are working really well on iOS right now. And they're a little bit different than the style of game that I have over the years been more successful with. So I think that you've got that issue. And then the second issue is that you just have this massive, massive quantity of games that are going through the stores. And so you need, it's a little bit more challenging to, it's a little more risky right now to really put the kind of investment behind a game that I think you need to be successful. So, when we started out, Destineer was one of my, one of the companies I'm still running, one of the companies I've been doing for about 12 years or so. When we started developing games for Destineer, it was possible for a game with maybe a $250,000 or even $1 million development budget to get into the top 20 sellers. Today, that budget on the console platforms is a minimum of $25 million. So, and it goes up to $100 million.
Yeah.
So the same sort of thing is going to happen on iOS. You're going to see, the companies that are doing that are successful right now on iOS are going to continue investing larger and larger amounts into their games on iOS, and that will make it a little bit more difficult for the younger companies that have fewer resources to be able to match the experience that the guys that are pumping the money in. Now, I understand that what people are going to say is, yeah, that means that the same thing's going to happen on consoles, which is that we get a whole bunch of sequels and low-risk product. Mm-hmm. And that is an inevitability of that. I think that there will still be an opportunity on iOS for people to do clever things. It's just that the bar for clever gameplay versus the graphics, and whereas where you get into a lot of the expenses and mm-hmm. enormous art budgets and graphics budgets, engineering budgets. So you're going to see, I think, that there will still be a period of time where people who have just a really clever idea but not a lot of money can be successful on iOS across the board. But over time, that is going to become much more of a challenge for the younger, lower-resourced companies to be able to compete.
Right. Now, in terms of iOS, do you think the palette is going to be smaller or is smaller on iOS simply because of the way you interact with the device?
The palette, you mean in terms of the game experience?
Yeah, kind of the games that you can actually play on this thing successfully. I've seen, because I know you've done a lot of, you know, the 3D stuff and the shooting kind of stuff. And I don't know, I've played some of them, and I just don't feel that they're very successful on them because of the input problems you have.
Absolutely, absolutely. With that kind of experience, with for the shooters especially, that the touchscreen devices have proven to be a very, very big challenge for the shooters. Now, there are a number of people, very smart people, who are thinking about how to solve that. And so I'm hoping that and in fact, there's some products that are in development right now that I know about that that will be coming out soon that I think are trying to solve some of those issues.
Right. OK, well, let's turn to NoteSuite. How about describing what it is and why you decided to enter a market that seems to be fairly full of options?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's hundreds of note-taking apps out there, hundreds of them. But I was having a hard time finding a note-taking app that solved the two issues that I most wanted to solve. And those two issues are, number one, an app that has the kind of robustness and capabilities but doesn't trap all my data inside of somebody else's proprietary system. This is the big challenge. So while I've got a very large competitor, very well funded competitor that now has 65 million registered users, and the problem though is that they and almost all of the other really good note taking apps require you to have a subscription. Now that subscription is free, unless you want to access your notes offline, in which case it's $45 a year, and that's what the price is now. I don't know what the price is going to be 5 years from now. I don't know if they're going to be around to give me my data 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the history of technology for 50 years, and this is no different now, there's this tug between the customer who wants to control their data and the company that wants to control their data. Because if the company controls the data, then they can control what they charge you to get access to that data at some point. And as a user who's been around the business for a long, long time, as a software company, hey, great. But as a user, that's not good.
Right.
That's just at some point that is going to cause the users a problem. As a user, I was not comfortable with giving up all of my notes and storing them only on somebody else's proprietary system. Now, when some of these guys got started, that was the only option. Mm-hmm. You didn't have these public syncing services like Dropbox, Google Drive, Box, or iCloud. And what they did was innovative, and I respect these companies, deeply respect these companies, because they built great products, and they got great products that solve great problems. But as a user, I am not comfortable if my data is only stored in somebody else's proprietary system. I want the flexibility to put my data wherever I want my data to be so that I know that I control it. So that's the first issue that I had with the note-taking apps. The second issue I had was a challenge with mobile devices is that mobile devices store all your files together with the app, not in a central filing system. And they do this for security reasons. Now, that's great for security, but the problem is that when I'm working on a project, I oftentimes have to gather a note, a Microsoft Word document, and I might have three or four other things, a PDF or an image or whatever. Oftentimes, I need to gather different kinds of files together for the projects that I'm working on. And if I've got all these different kinds of files stored in all these different kinds of apps, it becomes difficult to stay organized. Mm-hmm. So what we tried to do with NoteSuite is address both of those two issues. And the way we've addressed it is with the, in the case of the syncing, what we do is we store all your data on your devices, and then we use publicly available systems for syncing. So right now with NoteSuite, you can sync through iCloud, and we're going to add another service later on in the summer as well, so that users will actually have a choice of where is their data stored and how is it being synced. They can change it. They can dump me and go to somebody else if they want to. That's their choice. Mm-hmm. And all you pay is a one-time, relatively low amount of money to get your control of your data. You buy the app, that's it. You're done. There's no subscription fees. You're done. The second thing that we've done then is, rather than having all these little applets that you have to store your files in, all these different applets to bring them together, we've combined five different note-taking tools in one app. So you can take notes, you can manage to-dos, you can clip web pages, you can annotate almost anything, and you can read and search a variety of different document formats all together in one place, in one app, which makes it a lot easier to stay organized.
Okay. Now, when you showed me this a couple of weeks ago, one of the problems that some people have with drawing tools, and particularly doing signatures, is that you have very little space to work on, and you try to write something, and it's completely illegible. And you showed me a feature that I thought was very clever for getting around this.
Yeah. Thanks. No, yeah. So we have a writing board, and when you write on the writing board, it automatically shrinks your handwriting to fit better on the page. And then as you write to the edge of the writing board, it will automatically move the destination where it's writing on the page for you automatically. So you can just continue writing. So that way you don't have to look up. You can just keep on writing on this writing board, and it will it'll even give you a carriage return, so to speak, with your handwriting where it goes to the next line. It makes handwriting on a tablet, especially in a meeting, it makes it pretty easy.
Right. So which file formats does it support for importing media and text?
We support all of the Microsoft Office formats, and note that you can search your Microsoft Word docs and PowerPoints as well as your Microsoft Excel titles. But you can search all the content of a Microsoft Word and PowerPoint doc. You can PDF. You can search all the content of PDF for your and text files. Obviously, we do text files as well. We will take your iWork documents and we will convert those to PDF automatically, so that you can search those as well as annotate those. We will also recognize image formats, JPEG, PNG, and GIF, I believe, as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm missing something.
So movies or audio?
Well, you can record audio on both the Mac and iPad versions. You can record audio while you're taking notes, and we will sync that audio recording with each line of your notes. So, for example, if you're taking notes in a lecture, you can go back to the specific part of the audio recording just by tapping on the little speaker icon that we put next to that part of your notes.
Okay.
Now, we don't do anything with video right now, that is more of an issue of storage than anything else. We get a few requests for video, so I expect that at some point in the future we'll be addressing video as well.
Okay. Now, suppose that I brought some Office documents into the application. Other than annotating them, let's say I wanted to edit some of this stuff. Would I then export it, or can I do something within the app?
Yeah, right. So, we can't build all of Microsoft Office into our note-taking app.
Drat.
Drat.
But neither can Microsoft, so I wouldn't feel too bad about it.
Yeah, that's true. So, So what we do is you can use Google Drive Box or Dropbox to get your Microsoft Office documents in and out of NoteSuite. And for Microsoft Office formats, we retain the original format, so you can just send them back and forth. You can email them out. You can also email them into your notebook as well. You can set up an email address for your notebook and forward. Somebody sends you a Microsoft Word document, you just forward it right to your notebook and get it by email. And then in addition to that, you can use the iPad's Open In feature, mm-hmm. Which allows you to send a document from one app to another. Then on the Mac, you can also just simply drag a file, a Microsoft Office file, from your desktop into the NoteSuite directory, and then you'll have it inside of NoteSuite, and it will also then sync to your iPad automatically.
Right. Okay, so we've all heard of problems people have with iCloud syncing, and I know that you've enabled iCloud syncing with your app. So how difficult is it to implement, and how solid do you think the service currently is?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely it was challenging. A lot of the issues that people have described with iCloud are with a service that sits on top of iCloud called Core Data. Mm-hmm. And Apple's initial implementation of Core Data had its issues. Now, when our engineers took a look at iCloud right after Apple announced it, we decided we didn't think Core Data was going to work. And so rather than using Core Data, we actually built all of our own database syncing technology on top of iCloud. That is an enormous amount of work. But that also gives us the flexibility now to sync on other services besides iCloud. And in addition to that, it gave us a little bit more control over how all that process works. That investment, however, has been enormous. That's an enormous investment. Mm-hmm. We released with our previous product, Project Book, we enabled iCloud syncing in that in towards the end of 2012. So we've been running iCloud with customers now for quite some time and have a pretty good idea of where the issues were and where the issues are. And I would say that for 95% of users, of whether you're using our app or Apple's apps, you know, iCloud works great. It's amazing. The advantage to the customer is all they got to do to sync on iCloud right now is they push one button in our app. That's it. They don't have to enter in a new password. They don't have to give up their email address. They don't have to remember a new account information. They don't have to do any of that stuff. They just push one button and they are syncing. Done. And there is only one service that offers that, and that's iCloud.
Right.
So I think, and like I say, 95% of the time it works amazing. I mean, you'll have these situations where for whatever reason iCloud doesn't sync for an hour or two. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it happens, but it happens sometimes. But it's the exception, not the rule. 95% of the time, you know, it syncs within minutes from one device to the other. I have been running NoteSuite between my Mac and my iPad. On iCloud now for many, many months. So and by and large, I've been really. What it enables is amazing. I mean, I've got this document sitting on my Mac. I drag it into NoteSuite, and you know, and grab my iPad 5-10 minutes later, run out the door, and I've got it on my iPad. And it's a Microsoft Word doc. It might be a contract. I can, you know, in NoteSuite, then I can annotate that. I can turn it into a PDF on the road while I'm offline. I don't have to have an internet connection. And I can read it. I can mark it up. I can sign it. I can do whatever I want to it. And that was enabled by the magic of iCloud.
Right. So if you had Apple's ear in regard to iCloud and what you would like, what would you suggest?
Well, I think that you saw iCloud go from zero to about 300 million users in like 9 months. Mm-hmm. That's an enormous technical accomplishment, and I wonder whether the infrastructure, whether they were ready for that incredibly fast growth. And so I know that they're building all these server farms now for iCloud all over the world. And so I think that just Apple is going to have to maintain and the hardware infrastructure to support what I expect will be continued very, very fast growth for iCloud. That's the first thing I would say. The second thing is that Dropbox, Google Drive, and Box are doing a fantastic job of encouraging third parties to develop apps that work with their service and allow that data to go from one app to another. Mm-hmm. And in iCloud, you're kind of contained right now. And it works great simply for syncing one app's data to another device.
Right.
But if you want to, say, grab that Microsoft Word file that's in a folder in another app, that's not something that iCloud does, but it is something that iCloud's competitors do. So that would certainly be very high on the list of things that I would like to see Apple do as well.
Right. Well, as you've described, NoteSuite is a pretty deep app. Now, we're accustomed to seeing these kinds of applications on a computer where you've got a lot of screen real estate and you have the benefit of menus and tabs and that sort of thing, but not always on mobile devices. So how do you go about conceiving interfaces for small screens and a touch interface that make navigating a deep app like yours intuitive?
Yeah, that was a challenge. And quite frankly, in our first attempt at it with Project Book, I think we got a lot of things wrong. And that we fixed those for NoteSuite. We're getting a lot of favorable comments now that people find the features much more accessible in NoteSuite than they did in Project Book. And that I got a credit to a response from users, to be honest with you, because we got a lot of after we released Project Book, we had more than 1,000 different customers email us with either feedback or questions about the product, and that got us a lot of data about what do people understand, what don't they understand, what works, what doesn't work. And we took all that together and really rethought how certain aspects of the interface should work so that people can have this, like you say, this deep kind of feature set, but still not not feel overwhelmed and overwhelmed by it. That being said, it's still a challenge, right? Yeah. Because the problem we're trying to solve for people is that they can organize everything that matters to them in one place.
Right.
That's a big challenge. That's a really, really big challenge. Our solution to that is context sensitivity. So what we try to do is we say, hey, look, when you're working with a Microsoft Word file or a PDF, you only need certain controls. And when you're working with a note or a to-do, you get a completely different set of tools. And quite honestly, some of that design idea and philosophy came from our video game background.
Hmm.
Where in video games, you've got that challenge that you've got to keep that user moving through the experience while still experimenting with lots of different things in the environment.
Right.
And the way that you'd accomplish a lot of that is by only showing them what they need to know at the moment.
Okay. So you kind of did this quickly, just as an example, but let's try one more time. Give me a basic workflow that you talked about a contract. So give me another workflow that I would find this an ideal app for.
You bet. So what I have done now is I have I'd say probably 80% or 90% of my word processing related stuff in NoteSuite. And so that way I have everything organized in one place, and I put my Microsoft Word documents and my my PowerPoints and Excel files there in the same place. So now I have this all in this one app so that when I'm on the road and I need to, whether I need to type out a new note related to something, whether I need to track a to-do for it, it's all in one place. So a typical workflow, I would say, is that user is on their computer during the day in their office, and when they're working, they find something they need to do. They need to remind themselves about a to-do. They go up to the quick to-do feature and they type in natural words. They say, send Chris screenshots 2 weeks from tomorrow. Okay, mm-hmm. And they just type that into NoteSuite. NoteSuite puts that on your master to-do list. And then maybe 10 minutes later, they're in a meeting with somebody, and they're taking their notes in the meeting on their iPad. And the person there says, hey, I need to get that those sales projections on my desk in 3 weeks. And within their meeting notes, they type in, I need those screenshots to John in 3 weeks. And that's all they got to do. They push a button, and now that's on their master to-do list as well. So then when it's time to actually start working on these projects, rather than having to go into different apps to try to find the data that they need, all of that data is stored inside of NoteSuite and is organized either by folders or by tags. They can do that then on their computer, or they can do that while they're on the road, or while they're even in somebody else's office, or whether they're at their kid's soccer game, or whatever it might be, mm-hmm. because all that data is organized and it's together, and it's on both their computer and it's on their iPad. So truly, our goal for NoteSuite is that you are keeping the things that matter to you in one place so that it's much easier to stay organized.
Okay, and does it coordinate with reminders or calendar?
With calendar, yes. So you can, from the to-do manager, you can add anything to your calendar. You can add an event to your calendar. And then one of the features we got in our to-do manager is that when you it will automatically tell you about things that are due today or due this week, mm-hmm. as well as everything that you need to get started on today or this week based on how many days you told it that you needed to do it. At the today and this week lists, it will also tell you all of your events that are on your calendar for today or this week as well. So yeah, we interact with the calendar quite a bit. I mean, our goal there is that when you look at the today list in NoteSuite, that you've got a comprehensive look at everything you need to be worried about right now.
Right.
Right. Everything, all your to-dos and all your calendar events, whether it's something that's due or something that needs to get started. And then when it's time to actually work on those, you tap the attachment button and everything is already there in your notebook. So it's really easy to gather the information you need to actually do it. As far as reminders, reminders are a little bit of a trickier situation. So with reminders, we get a lot of requests for reminders syncing, and we're looking at ways that we're going to try to do that. The challenge is this. Right now, Apple's API does not expose a date stamp for when the reminder was created. Mm-hmm. Well, we need those date stamps to sync that across two different devices so that your Mac doesn't bring that event in, as well as your iPhone brings the same event in.
Right.
That's the issue with reminders, but we're hoping that we can find some ways around that.
Okay. And is there feature parity between the mobile version and the Mac version?
So the iPad version has a couple more features than the Mac version, and the Mac version does certain things for workflow a little bit differently than the iPad version, because we think that when you're on your laptop or desktop that you do things a little bit differently. So the differences are this. On the iPad version allows you to annotate just about anything. Mm-hmm. You can draw with really beautiful, realistic digital ink on just about anything. You can draw on a photo and then email that JPEG to somebody. You can draw on a note or a web clip, and you can annotate PDFs, and you can convert your Microsoft Office and iWork documents into PDFs so they can be annotated. You can do all of that on the iPad, but you can't do that on the Mac, especially because there isn't really a great mechanism for drawing mm-hmm. on a Mac screen.
Right.
On the Mac, we give you a couple of things that we can't give you on the iPad because of the physical interface. The difference is number one, that we have a menu bar app on the Mac, so that you can, if you're working in Microsoft Word and you want to create a to do, you just go up to our menu bar app and say, "Hey, quick to do," type in, whatever reminder you need to type in. You type it in natural words, and it'll add it to your to-do list in NoteSuite. And then number two is on the Mac, we also have the ability to drag files or images from your desktop or another app right directly into NoteSuite. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can't do that actually because of the interface on the iPad. And then the third thing is on the Mac, we have web clipping extensions for Safari, Chrome, and Firefox that allow you to clip web pages directly to your NoteSuite notebook. Cleans up all the clutter, makes it searchable, all that. And you can do that directly from your browser. Whereas in the iPad version, in order to clip a web page on the iPad, you hit the share button in Safari, hit copy, and then open up NoteSuite, and then it'll import it. So those are three differences between the iPad and the Mac version.
Okay. I don't know that we've mentioned the price on these apps. Maybe we should.
Yeah. Well, right now, we've got a special introductory offer where we're selling the iPad version for $199. Its normal price is $4.99. Mm-hmm. And then on the Mac, we are selling the Mac version for an introductory price of $4.99. And the regular price is $9.99.
Are you shocked by how little software costs today?
Yeah, and especially even right now, you look at a video game console product is still selling for $60.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but that same product on the on a mobile device is a lot cheaper than that. Yeah, we are shocked. I mean, there's a good part and a bad part to that. This sounds counterintuitive, but what I found is that the lower prices are requiring a higher quality.
Hmm.
Now, this is weird, right? You'd think it'd be the other way around.
Right.
But the challenge I've got is if I go spend $99 for a productivity app and it doesn't quite work the way I want it to, I'm going to keep trying to figure out how to make it work the way I want it to.
Mm-hmm.
But if I've spent $5 for it and it doesn't work, I'm on to the next thing.
Right.
So it actually drives us to create, I think, simpler interfaces and a much more robust testing because it's so easy for that user who's tried our product to switch to another one.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I know you've worked at Apple, so you can give me the Apple answer to this one if you like.
Okay.
And the question is, can you talk about future plans for the app? And you know what the Apple answer is.
Yeah, the Apple answer is simple. It's two letters long. Yeah. No. So, you know, I would say this about what we would like to do. Number one is that we really listen to feedback from users who send that to us to our support at Theory.io address. And we get ideas from what customers have said. A lot of the way we've shaped NoteSuite has come from feedback from users. The same thing's going to happen with our Mac app now. That's new. Over the years, I've probably shipped 200 products through my companies, probably more than that, actually, mm-hmm. consumer software products. And what I think that no matter how aggressively you test it with users and internally before you release it, once it actually goes into the wild and people start using it for real work, that both you and they discover things that you just can't discover during a typical testing process. Mm-hmm. And so we really try to internalize that feedback that we get from users about what they like and don't like about the way something works or the features that they want, or in some cases, the features they don't want. We just have found certain things that we thought would have traction with users, and it's not turning out to be as big a deal as we thought. And so we can orient our resources towards the things that are.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, what about your future? You've done so many things. So is Theory.io your home for the foreseeable future, or do you have other irons in the fire?
My focus for the foreseeable future is absolutely on everything that we can do with Theory and continuing to build NoteSuite.
Excellent. Well, as I said, go ahead.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Chris, I should say one other thing. We get the question too: what's next for NoteSuite? And I got to say that the iPhone is next. So to be clear about that, I skipped that. That's almost so obvious that I didn't even mention it. But it's we've iPad and Mac, and obviously we're going to come out on iPhone as well. That's the next thing. And then that we've got a lot of ideas that we're getting from our customers, as well as a lot of enhancements for what we'll be doing with NoteSuite. And then after that, I want to do a little bit more in the video gaming world that once I get the chance.
Yeah, okay. Well, again, NoteSuite is available for the iPad. Right now, it's just $1.99 at the App Store. I've been playing with it for the last couple of weeks, and it really is a remarkable effort. So congratulations. I know you spent a lot of time working on this, and everything I've seen so far has been really, really impressive.
Thank you, Chris. That means a lot. You've seen an awful lot of stuff, so I really appreciate that compliment. Thank you.
No, it really is quite good. So, again, check it out, everyone. And thanks, Peter, for joining us.
You bet. Thank you, Chris.
And that wraps up this edition of the Macworld Podcast. I'd like to thank Peter Tamte and, of course, you for listening. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to drop us a line at podcast@macworld.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 415-967-3622. This is Chris Breen reminding you that you can find more Apple, macOS, iOS, and technology news, views, and information at macworld.com. See you around.